People of Jerusalem, Rome is your friend. To prove our friendship, it is customary at this time for us to make a video in which we explain something very important to you. And the thing that I want to explain to you today is why it is that the West is collapsing. Why is the civilization of the West falling into the wobble? Now, there are some among you who believe that this will never, ever happen. They believe that the West will continue expanding until we go to Mars or to Venus or to other planets. And there are others of you who believe that it is all the fault of the elites. What I will show today is that Rome went exactly the same way as the West is going. Exactly the same way, down to the finest detail, and for exactly the same reasons. Why did Rome fall? Rome fell because of declining intelligence and because of dysgenics created by civilization. In essence, the old internet meme about difficult times creating great men, who in turn create easy times creating weak men, creating difficult times, turns out to be true. And that is what we will look at today. Hail Caesar. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, today I would like to discuss, as I said there, channeling Pontius Pilate, who, by the way, was hanging around during the heights of Rome, during the golden age of Rome. I would like to look at why it is that Rome fell. And what I will show is that it fell for precisely the same reasons that the West is falling, and therefore it makes it fantastic, and not just that, but other civilizations as well, and therefore it makes it fantastically likely that we are going the same way as Rome for the same reasons. That is the most parsimonious explanation. So, why did Rome fall? It's a combination of, it's basically luxury resulting in individualism and decreasing intelligence. But before we look in more detail at that, let us look a bit at the history of Rome. Rome was mythologically established in 753 BC. By about 509 BC, you have the Roman Republic. By the 3rd century BC, Rome is standing up for itself. Rome is fighting off Pyrrhus of Greece successfully. Rome is fighting off Hannibal of Carthage, and so on. Rome is a serious player alongside the Greek states. By the 2nd century BC, Rome has absorbed all around them. Rome has absorbed all of the countries around them. Rome is turning into an empire. By 49 BC, things are degenerating into chaos and whatever, and war and fighting. And so Julius Caesar takes over, and that is the end of the Roman Republic. But then you start to get the rise of the empire, and it could be argued that in many ways this is a golden age. Even though it is a dictatorship, it's not a republic anymore, it is a golden age, and we have the Pax Romana that lasts from about 27 BC to 180 AD. So this is how Rome rises and manages to conquer all that is before it. Now, across this period, let's look at the size of Rome and its achievements. Under the Emperor Trajan in 117 AD, the Roman Empire was so massive that it stretched from Britain, from the north of England, all the way down to Egypt. There were possibly something like 60 million people living in the Roman Empire, which is a significant portion of the population of the globe at the time. Rome itself, the city of Rome, had a population of 1 million people. That was not reached again in a city until 1810, when London had a population of 1 million people. Rome had a fire brigade. Rome had a police force. You saw nothing like that, again, until about the 1830s, again, in England. Rome had a system of plumbing that removed waste from the city. You didn't see any, and underfloor heating and all of these kinds of innovations. Again, you didn't see anything like this until really the 19th century. Rome had aqueducts that were so fantastically good that some of them still work today. Rome Rome had a system of roads that connected the empire together. Again, no proper functioning roads until really the 18th century and the rise of the Industrial Revolution. Rome had a navy, a functioning navy. Nothing like this really in Europe again until the 18th century. So essentially, Rome reached the cusp of an industrial revolution, the cusp of an industrial society. And on some measures, it seemingly exceeded it. It actually went further than we got to by the time we industrialized. So with the collapse of Rome, we have, to a great extent, 1,000 wasted years, a dark age of 1,000, of more than 1,000 years on some measures, but certainly about 1,000, over 1,000 years. It took us over 1,000 years to get back to what we had already had at the time of Rome. Now, why did this happen? Well, in about the third century, about 235, you start to get a crisis. The Romans withdraw from Britain for a while, and it falls into chaos. You get these constant fighting over who's emperor and whatever. But it's just about held together. Then, after the death of Constantine, which is in the fourth century, it really does fall apart. You have barbarians harrying the empire already by about 226, and eventually the barbarians start taking the empire from the Romans, and Rome basically falls apart and splits up. Now, if we look at by 476, it's the end of Rome. They basically release the West over to the barbarians who they've allowed within their empire, who they've drawn upon for labour, and Rome is basically over, and it retreats to the Eastern Empire, to Byzantium. Now, if we look at this period, it's quite interesting. You see that the level of innovations, now that's a way of looking at how intelligent the empire is, and these change across time, and I will look at that in a minute. Now the traditional explanations that are given for why this happened is inept leaders and all of this kind of thing, but those are really symptoms. What actually happened? Well, the most parsimonious explanation is simply the nature of an empire itself. What does a great civilization do? What a great civilization does is it tends to reflect very high levels of intelligence. So if we look at our own history, we see that per capita innovation, which is a very good marker of intelligence, is increasing across time from the 1100s onwards. This implies that we are under selection pressure for intelligence and we are getting more intelligent. Paralleling this per capita major innovation increase, you have an increase in the size of the head, you have it, which means that brains are getting bigger, you have an increase in literacy, even though standards of living aren't really increasing very much, which means that people are more intelligent. You have a decrease in interest rates, which again implies that people are becoming more intelligent because they look to the future more, and on various other markers. Eventually, you have the breakthrough of the Industrial Revolution. And with the breakthrough of the Industrial Revolution, you reduce environmental harshness. Environmental harshness selects for intelligence. And we know that in 17th century England, the richer 50% of the population had doubled the completed fertility of the poorer 50%. And wealth is a robust correlate about 0.4 of intelligence. And that across generations, it's about 0.7 heritable. So we were definitely selecting for intelligence. Then we get the breakthrough of the Industrial Revolution. This is innovations by the smart fraction, by the most intelligent element of the society, and this of course reduces environmental harshness, because you have plumbing, you have better medicine, you have inoculations, you have reduction in disease, you have cheaper food, you have all of these things that reduce environmental harshness and therefore allow a change in the nature of the society. You have something very, very similar in Rome. And there's a paper by Jonathan Huebner, and I look at this in my book, At Our Wit's End, where this can be tracked across time. Across time, you have an increase in the level of major per capita innovations across time, until about 350 BC. They are going up and up and up and up. Now, what this is showing is that there is harsh selection pressure for intelligence. What this creates is an easier society. It reduces environmental harshness. It creates luxury. What you had in Rome, as with the Industrial Revolution, is an excess. They were able to produce an excess. They were able to produce so much grain that grain could be distributed for free to the poor. There was a period of time where they said, let them have bread and circuses, where the poorest people of Rome, there was no jobs for them to do. They were all being done by slaves and outsiders. And so the poorest free people of Rome were just distributed grain to live off and given given gladiator shows to watch and whatever to shut them up. I mean, basically, it was the social security underclass of the time. That's how wealthy Rome got. So what that meant is that Rome had a huge level of luxury and reduced selection pressure for intelligence. It reduced this selection pressure. It meant that poorer people could survive. Rome also had sort of proto-contraception, which meant that wealthier people could avoid having children if they wanted to. Rome also had a system where you could abandon deformed children and things like this. This was perfectly acceptable, so these people could be gotten rid of. But as this process continued, you have this reduced pressure on intelligence. Now, what this tends to create is an evolutionary mismatch. Our evolutionary match is that we are evolved to live in an environment where there is the constant threat of death and all of this sort of thing. And it's been shown that if you elevate mortality salience, then people become more desirous to have children. What you have with Rome is a reduction in mortality salience, a reduction in the presence of death, and a general sort of evolutionary mismatch where things aren't quite as they should be. And so people that are more environmentally sensitive, they will pick up on this and they will have a sense of dysphoria. People that are intelligent are more environmentally sensitive. So if you put them in an evolutionary mismatch, they will become more maladapted because they're more environmentally sensitive. And this seems to happen again and again and again. And the result is that intelligent people start to elect not to have children. They don't want children. In particular, what happens is that you get a build-up as well. Another thing that we have is in these harsh Darwinian selection systems, there is what's called group selection. So the group that is high in positive ethnocentrism and negative ethnocentrism will beat the other group and will come to predominate. Now, the selection pressure for this, once you bring in luxury, once you bring in things that reduce child mortality to make it lower so that people that are genetically sicker can survive, will be a deviation from being group-oriented. What this will result in is a build-up of people who are more individualistic, who are more selfish. These people wouldn't have survived under the prior conditions because everything which is adaptive, such as intelligence, such as group orientation, whatever, are all bundled together. Well, if you bring in luxury, then you get a deviation from this in the direction of being individualistically oriented and selfish. Eventually, these people reach a tipping point of about 20% of the population, something like that, and then the society starts to tip over and become more individually oriented. This creates, for people that are highly intelligent, even more of an evolutionary mismatch to which they are even more sensitive. The result is more intelligent people start to elect not to have children. If the worldview of the society becomes materialism, they will imbibe that worldview more. They will come up with ways to conform to it more, and therefore they will become more materialistic, and thus they will have less of a belief in the eternity of life and monumentalist values. And they will therefore have less of a desire to have children. They will become depressed more because of the evolutionary mismatch which they are in, and they will have less of a desire to have children. They will be more able to think and contemplate the futility of life in this evolutionary mismatch where things aren't quite right, and therefore they will desire less to have children. So they will have fewer children. And this was noted in Rome at the beginning of the empire, that the higher classes resigned from having children. And Augustus, this was commented on at the time by Ovid and by various commentators, the Emperor Augustus imposed a tax to try and force higher class people to have more children, and they were prepared to pay the tax. So we know that exactly what's happening now, which is that the higher, more educated you are, the more intelligent you are, the less likely you are to have children, was exactly what was happening in Rome. And it was happening for exactly the same reasons, which was that they had reached a high level of luxury, which had created a sort of weird evolutionary mismatch of a society, which made people that were more environmentally sensitive, depressed, and less inclined to have children. Also, it created these materialistic values whereby everyone has to be rich. Children get in the way of being rich. If you're more intelligent, then you have the impulse control and whatever to avoid having children, so you don't have children. And so having lots of children becomes something associated with the low impulse control stupid people, and so therefore they have more children. Previously, the low impulse control stupid people would have died. Their children would have died young because the society was so poor, and they would have died. Now the society is more luxurious. You have running water, you have better heating, you have aqueducts, you have all of these things that make society much easier, make it easier for survive. So mutational load is selected out less. Mutational load is going to be associated traditionally with the lower classes. The lower classes who have lower IQ are able to expand, and so the society becomes stupider. And the result of that is a decline in per capita major innovation. So this is exactly what happened with us. Now, the second thing that happens, as you have this rise in individualism and so on, is that the society becomes less group selected, and the various things that are associated with being group selected start to collapse because the individualism in the society rises. Eventually, we tip over, once about 20% of society is individualistic, you tip over into being an individualising society, and you start questioning everything that is group-oriented, including the religion and that which the religion promotes. Now, one of the things that the religion would have promoted would have been patriarchy. Why did it promote patriarchy? Because in a society that is under harsh levels of group selection, we've got to get men to internally cooperate. They will be more likely to cooperate if they don't fear being cuckolded, and they will be less likely to fear being cuckolded if their women are strongly controlled, and so they know that they're not going to be cuckolded. This was the case with ancient Rome. Women were veiled. It was rather like what fundamentalist Islamic societies are like now. Again, by the time of Augustus, this was falling apart. Women stopped wearing the veil. Women became basically proto-feminists. Hortensia led an army, for goodness sake, and became involved in politics. Hortensia led a campaign to stop taxation for women. You had a new kind of woman, particularly among the upper class, who was feminist, who was a leader, you have basically the rise of feminism among the Romans, just as we see. Now, the next thing you see is the collapse of religiousness. The religiousness promotes group-oriented values and holds society together, but the religiousness comes under attack as you have a more individualistic society, more and more individualistic people that like chaos and disorder and hate what the religion is promoting. So, again, when Christians first came along, they were accused of being atheists, and they were killed accordingly. It was considered to be terribly, terribly bad for Rome that you'd have these people that wouldn't sacrifice to the traditional gods, and therefore they had to die. Now, gradually, as we move through, Christianity becomes accepted, Christianity becomes tolerated, and Christianity eventually takes over as the religion of the empire. Now, interestingly, the result of that is a period of being more group selected, where the level of per capita innovation actually goes back up. So it's like a silver age, a revival, as the society becomes more religious. But eventually it's not good enough. The collapsing intelligence it suppresses feminism. It does all these things because it's a group-selected thing, Christianity. But the collapse of intelligence is too severe, and eventually you collapse into chaos, even in spite of Christianity. Now, the next thing, of course, that you have is homosexuality. Homosexuality is suppressed normally by all religions for whatever reason you can go into, but it's considered a bad thing, I guess, because it means that men aren't having children or whatever. It's antenatal or something like that. But it is tolerated. We know from Juvenal and other poets, it's tolerated in late Rome. It's tolerated until Christianity comes along. Anyway, it's tolerated. Equally with feminism, the Christians were commenting, Tertullian commented on women dressing in lascivious fashions and the tolerance of promiscuous sexuality and the tolerance of women bearing flesh and whatever. That was clearly happening by the time, by that period of Rome. But equally, homosexuality, until the Christians came along, was heavily tolerated, as it had not previously been. And that, again, is therefore a marker of a collapse in the religion, a collapse in group selection, a rise in luxury, a rise in all of these within the population. Another thing then is the rise of immigration. You always get this in late societies. In 91 BC, the Romans were prepared to go to war to stop people that were not Roman from being given Roman citizenship. By the year 212, they are extending Roman citizenship to everybody living in Italy, and not long after that, you have Germanics and whatever coming into Rome, taking over positions within the Roman Empire, running the Roman Empire. The last Western emperor of the Roman Empire was Germanic. So you have a tolerance of immigration. Why? Well, because previously the group-oriented religion promoted the idea that Romans are the best, Romans are the dominant people, Romans are God's people, all this sort of thing. And now, this, as the religion collapses and group orientation collapses, you have a rise in individualism and you have a rise in these values that are associated with individualism, such as equality, and therefore the belief that everyone's equal and therefore the belief that we're not the best. And you also have a decadent focus on money over the good of the group and having immigrants coming in is cheaper, it's cheap labour, that sort of thing. And so therefore immigration is also seen at this point. So every single thing that is happening to us also happened to Rome without exception. And the reason for it was that Rome managed to create luxury. It managed to create in a very diluted form what the reduced selection pressures that the Industrial Revolution managed to create. And the result was a very diluted version of what we are seeing now, a kind of foreshadowing of what we are seeing now, a tepid version of what we are seeing now. All the markers are exactly the same, and it is because you have an intelligent people that creates luxury. Luxury reduces selection pressure for group orientation and for intelligence. The result is a decline in intelligence and a decline in per capita major innovation. And the result is also a rise in anti-group selected ideas, basically in individualism, because there's no external pressure against individualism, and therefore there is the questioning of all group-oriented things. This includes anti-homosexuality, this includes anti-feminism, this includes whatever. These are all questioned, and you have runaway individualism, whereby you gain greater status by being more individualistic, and therefore you have people being atheistic, you have people being whatever, left-wing, basically the left-wing of their time. And so therefore all the and this helps to create an even less group-oriented society. All the markers are the same. Declining intelligence, feminism, immigration, homosexuality, atheism, whatever. All the markers are the same. Now, if you want to turn around and say, oh, well, there was something about Rome, there were conspiracy theories there. Well, maybe there were. And you would expect that, actually, because the more individualistic people are, then the less the society is doing has structures to stop psychopathic individualists from getting to the top of society. And so once those people get to the top of society, then they might engage with other people like them in, as you might call it, conspiracies in order to maintain their power, to keep themselves in a position of power. So the idea of an elite conspiracy and this collapse is symbiotic. There would be some sort of, you know, that's perfectly possible. And the other thing, even if there is another explanation for Rome, you see this with other empires. Sir John Glubb, in his book The Fate of Empires, notes the same exact process with Greece, and even with Baghdad, exactly the same. Feminist women imams, women lawyers towards the end, all sort of thing. The heroes change from being military types who are group-oriented to being singers and poets and individually-oriented sort of people. So the point is that is why Rome collapsed. Rome collapsed because it created luxury. The result of it creating luxury, which it was able to do because of its very high intelligence. The result of it creating luxury was that the selection pressures were weakened. The result of that was a decline in intelligence and a rise in individualism. The result, individualistic genetics. The result of that was the society tipped over to being more individualizing. The result of that was that it questioned group-oriented things that helped to maintain a group-oriented society. And the ultimate result of that was the invasion of the society, was the breakup of the society into smaller polities of, you know, immigration reduces social trust and all this sort of thing, and the collapse of the society back into the Dark Ages. The result of that was that high pressures were, Darwinian pressures were imposed again, and the eventual result of that was selection for intelligence, selection for group orientation, and therefore a society once more that was very high in intelligence and very high in the values that have been high in Rome at the beginning, you know, in 700 BC when Rome was founded. And now we are back in that phase of the Dark Age, where we have declining per capita innovation. We are back to 1600 or so in terms of per capita major innovation. We are back to a fall. We are going through it again. We are back to 1600 on that key measure, and we are back to about the same period on various other measures. And indeed, just as the Romans forgot how to do things once they started collapsing, they forgot how to make glass. We've now forgotten certain things. We have forgotten how to make keep Concord in the air. We can't do that anymore. So we're definitely in a Dark Age, and it's not to do with some conspiracy, or at least it's not substantially to do with that. We're just going through the same phase. And the evidence for that is that Rome was exactly the same as us, even though it didn't fly quite as high as us, and therefore perhaps did not fall quite as low as we might fall. Well, I hope this is a bit of interest. If it has, then please subscribe. It helps us violently if you do that. Remember, I live show Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, and I will see you soon. And goodbye!